Hey guys, it's Andrew from Cinematic Protastic, and boy, are you in for a treat. This pandemic has messed up a lot of things, and this podcast is no exception. What you are about to hear is a lost episode. This episode was recorded in March of 2020, right before the quarantines and shutdowns. Sadly, this episode fell through the cracks, but thankfully it has been found. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some slightly outdated comments, but our thoughts on 1917 will remain timeless. This audio recording is recorded in all one entire take.
A first in podcast history. Welcome back to Cinematic Protastic. I'm Philip.
And I'm Andrew. And we are going to be talking about the movie 1917.
But first, hit us up on social media. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook.
And more.
And more.
Cinematic Protastic at or at Cinematic Protastic. Hit us up on those social platforms. You can comment. You can leave messages. And on anchor.fm, you can even leave us a voicemail, and we can even maybe put that on the air.
Let us know what you like, what you don't like, or what you want us to talk about.
What's your favorite movie, and we'll talk about it. How about that?
There you go. So we are now past the 2019 awards. You've had the Oscars and the Golden Globes. Overall, I think, me personally, it was a much, I enjoyed the Oscar more than I probably have in the past. And I don't know if it's because I had more films under my belt, so to speak, or if it just was, I just enjoyed the broadcast. I'm not for sure what added to that or made that happen. I think part of it is there were some things that happened. There were some firsts, some films that won things that I don't think people were expecting. Obviously, the Golden Globes are usually the guideline that you just kind of assume flows into what's going to happen or who's going to win. But the biggest surprise is, unfortunately, a film I have not seen yet, but the film Parasite. It won for Best International or Best Foreign Language.
They changed the category. We can't remember what
film, so it won for that category.
It was like International Language Film.
Which then, was not unexpected.
Yeah.
It won for Best Screenplay, Best director, and Best Film.
Best Motion Picture.
So it was the first foreign film to win the biggest award of the night. One of my other favorite moments about it was original score. You had, and I've done a little bit of research, but I can't say for sure if it was her first film or not. But you had a newcomer into film and soundtracks and scores, and I can't pronounce her name.
Yeah.
But it's Hildur Gunnadottir. Again, I'm butchering that. But she won for The Joker, and when you looked at the other people in the category, she beat out
the John Williams.
She beat out two Newman brothers, Randy and Thomas.
They're brothers.
I don't know if they're brothers. They're related. There's like a Newman family.
I have had no idea. No.
Yeah. There's like a Newman dynasty, and they're all involved in music. So in the category, she was up against Randy Newman. Thomas Newman, John Williams, and Alexandra Desplat, who, he's won some awards in this category for recent films. She was the only woman in the category, and she's a newcomer. And you look at the names of the people that she beat out, and it's not to say that I think it's great that she won. It's just crazy that the people she was against. So it was a really cool moment to have her win in that category, and then also the Parasite.
We won into this Oscar season, as you were saying before we got started, we felt a little bit more prepared because in years past,
we would have been like, I haven't seen a single one of these movies. Oscar films, unfortunately for us, not that we're not interested in them, but they typically don't fall under the category of I'm going to see, like, we can only see movies every once in a while now. And so we go to movies that we are definitely, are not necessarily definitely, but we feel a high degree of satisfaction seeing, which is typically action films, comic book movies, and horror films of the like. And so Oscar films don't typically fall under that category. And so sometimes they fall under the wayside.
Or they're nominated, but it's for, I don't want to say the obscure categories, but it's like for set design, costume, and
yeah.
And not to downplay those awards, but they're never, we tend to not see the movies that are up for
the best picture
and best actor.
And so we went into this seeing 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Jinx.
Joker.
And then you had seen,
I had also watched The Irishman beforehand.
And I tried to see, to watch Marriage Story before the Oscars happened. I still haven't watched it. My wife and I keep wanting, like, hey, let's watch it. But then it's like 9:30 when we're ready to start watching. So I was like, well, it's too late to really start it now. We had seen a good portion of the films. And so we felt like we kind of had a say in in what was going
to
happen.
I had a better, when it came to, you know, like, saying or picking, you know, if I wanted to do like a ballot and say, okay, who's going to win, I went into it with better idea and more of a, I had more knowledge going into it.
And as these movies as these award seasons started, me particularly, I felt and hoped that 1917 would win. And now we're going to tell you why.
So 1917, it came into the award season and won Best Motion Picture and Best Director at the Golden Globe, which, again, the Globes are usually a good
predictor.
And I think that film winning at the Golden Globes was a surprise. It wasn't necessarily the one that they expected there. And then so going into the Oscars, it lost in that category to Parasite. It does win. It wins for visual effects, sound mixing, and cinematography. So it did win a couple of the awards it was nominated for.
And VFX was the last category that I thought it would win in, because it was up against like Star Wars, The Irishman, which did
a de-aging.
Did all that de-aging stuff and things like that. And, you know, I knew that there was visual effects in the film. No movie's done without visual effects anymore. But I just didn't think it was necessarily anything that was outrageous. And, you know, other than putting in backgrounds and things like that, which most movies do nowadays anyway. But then I looked into why it won.
Yeah.
And that was insane.
So when you mentioned, you know, it's up against Star Wars or a movie like Star Wars, and you go into that knowing that that is just chocked full of special effects and visual effects and
spaceships
flying in space. And you're like, I know that that's not really happening. So a lot of that is fake. This movie, it had the ability to put a visual effect in place
and not even know.
And she didn't know it.
Yeah. Backtrack here for just a second. So the basic synopsis of this movie is that there's an army about to storm the front lines of the Germans. And the British army feels like they have the Germans on the run. But it turns out the Germans are pulling back on purpose to make it seem like that. And the British army is walking into a trap. Literally less than 24 hours before this big mission is about to go forth, the British army finds out about this, but they can't communicate with them because all telephone lines are down and before cell phones and things like that. So they cannot communicate to that army to stop the attack. So they tell these two guys, because it's easier for two guys to get through than an entire army, to try to go as fast as they can on foot to meet up with this brigade that's about to go out. And pardon me if I'm using these military terms incorrectly, but that's the best of my knowledge. And the film itself is them going through enemy territory to stop this attack. And so as you were mentioning, there are things in your face that just you didn't think about. And right at the get-go, there's a portion where they're walking through these trenches and going through barbed wire areas to prevent, you know, soldiers from storming each other. And they're walking through and there's a tank stuck in a ditch and abandoned. And I thought they went and found a tank
or built a tank
or built one or something. It was, like I said, it's the only part where that tank is used. There's no, they don't climb it. They don't get into it. They don't use it. And I don't remember seeing tanks anywhere else in the film. And they just walked by this tank. And I just figured it was a prop and they put it there and they needed it for 2 days and that was it. When I researched this, that tank is not real. And I went and saw this film twice. And the first time I wasn't looking for it and I didn't think of it. So I thought maybe because I wasn't paying attention to it, you know, maybe that's because it wasn't the focus of my vision that it appeared real. So the second time I was watching that tank. I was staring at it for the entire 37 seconds it was on film. I don't know how long it was. It looked like a real tank. And I am still in disbelief.
So it's one of those things where I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing some kind of special features on this film and maybe, you know, the visual effects, how they were made. Because I'm curious how much of it was real now based on that one piece of information. Because there was also a scene where they're walking through a town but there are spent
mortar shells
all over the place.
Like dunes of them.
Again,
apparently they're none all
of them
fake.
None of them are real. So that we're getting to the point with visual effects these days where we're watching films and we have no idea what we're watching isn't real.
Yeah.
And so again, go back to Star Wars. Now some of the vehicles might be miniatures, but the firing, the lasers and whatnot, the space, everything, you know, you're watching visual effects. This is a film where it's using special effects, and maybe it's because your mindset just kind of thinks, well, they're, you know, this would be something they could make a prop of.
Yeah,
I don't know. It
easily could have been a prop, and they maybe they did have some, but yeah, according to there was a video that came out, and you can look it up on YouTube, and it talks about the category of visual effects by a guy who did visual effects for what do you know? Star Wars. And he talks about why these particular films are being nominated, and that's where he talked about the things in 1917 that were just insane. Now, the other thing that the visual effects were also used for were things that weren't as obvious, which were the transitions from one scene to the next. And the reason why that's a big deal is because the big thing about this film is that it is shot to appear to be one continuous take. So from the opening shot to the end of the film, with the exception of a period where a character is knocked out, the camera is constantly going. And unlike a scene where two people are having a conversation, it goes from person A to person B to person A to person B. This one shows both characters on the screen at all times and shows them walking from here to there. And the camera does not cut. It does not change. And it keeps going. But that's not possible to do in real life. You know, this movie took months to film. They couldn't film for entire months and then put it together. Like, you know, no one would go see that.
So the fact that it won cinematography, that I understand more than the visual. That, like I said, when I was watching it, I was like, well, yeah, that won cinematography because of the way they shot it. The one thing about, though, that the one shot aspect of it, I think that was a big draw for people to come see the movie.
It was.
And one of the downfalls to that, for me at least, in the first maybe 30 minutes of the movie is my mind was, I'm going to pick out where they make the transition where, oh, that's where they actually cut the shot. You know, so I was looking for, when do they walk behind the rock, or when do they go behind a tree, you know, things like that. But I had to tell myself, I said, stop doing that.
Yeah.
And enjoy the movie.
So what Philip's talking about real quick, if you're not quite sure what we're talking about, is so this film was filmed to look like it was one continuous take, but it was actually multiple takes. So in between these takes, they would do transitions to make it appear like it was one continuous take. One very common thing to do is if you have characters outside walking inside, it's really bright outside, it's really dark inside. For a brief moment, the camera goes to complete black. And so that's an obvious cut point of, okay, this was take one, and this is what you're going into is some other take that was shot possibly even months later. But at that moment of darkness, they stitch those two clips together, and as they play, you don't see the cut, so it seems like the camera follows them from outside, inside, and it all just seems like one thing. And so Philip was talking about how he was trying to find all of those cut points, those moments where your view is obstructed by blackness, for example, or something else, and that he had to tell himself to stop.
And trying to do that, I wasn't really able to enjoy the movie. And so once I was able to kind of let go of that mindset, every now and then I still was like, oh, I bet that was a cut. But I stopped looking for them. It's funny because I heard somebody comment about this movie, and I asked, or I heard somebody say that they went and saw this movie before I did. And I was excited because I was like, how was it? What did you think? And their response was, I thought it was terrible. And I was like, why? And they're like, it was slow. It just didn't seem like it had anything happening and blah, 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 this and that. And so I asked them, did you know going into it that it was meant to look like one shot? And they said, no, I had no idea. And so that made me think, I'm like, I'm wondering if you go into it not knowing that's how it's set up, does it affect how you enjoy that movie? I don't know.
Yeah. For me personally, I'm not a huge fan of war films. War films that I've seen, I do enjoy, but I don't go seeking them out. I don't know why. I'm not drawn to them specifically. And so the only reason I wanted to see this movie was mainly because of its gimmick of the one take. And so I'm definitely glad I saw this, because this is one of my favorite movies that I've seen in a while. And just on the sheer technicality of, to me, just knowing, okay, how much work went into making these moments seamless. Mm-hmm. Because like you, I went in wanting to look for those moments where the scene cuts. And of course I noticed, for me at least, there was a real obvious one at the beginning. And, you know, these guys are walking and all of a sudden they stop. Somebody walks in front of them and then they go. And I'm like, yep, there it is. That's the first one. I enjoy it. Like, I was looking for that and I was enjoying finding those moments. But as the movie was going on, you start getting into the story and you kind of stop thinking about that. And you just get drawn into it. And of course, every now and then, you're like, oh yeah, this is one take. Up there was that moment right there. But for every moment that I noticed, I'm pretty sure there were 10 that I didn't. Yeah. And so that's the thing that I'm like, ooh, like there's secrets that I don't know. And and it helped me. And that was part of my appreciation for it. But then, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but then the music of this film also really, really got to me as well.
On the other hand, I do enjoy war movies. I don't know if the fact that this was a war movie is what drew me to it or not. I want to say the first trailer I saw made me want to see it. And I know I hadn't heard or I hadn't read about how it was set up to be a one shot at that point. I think when I found out, I was even more intrigued, because like you, I'm like, how do you do that? But the trailer just by itself, before I knew that tidbit, had already piqued my interest on seeing the film. again, you know, it's not a typical war film because it's nothing like a Saving Private Ryan, which is one of my favorite war films mm-hmm. because it was shot to be very realistic, and it's going to be tough for anybody to top that storming the beach scene in that film. But going back to the person that I was talking to that said it was slow, it is a very, when you think of war movies, especially like World War One, World War Two type movies, I think, you know, Saving Private Ryan is one that you kind of gauge or compare them to. And yeah, if you put them side by side, 1917 is very slow.
Yeah. The whole Normandy beach scene, it's a really long sequence, but it's just so much going on.
And there's cuts and, you know.
And it's action-packed.
That's one thing that movies, even more so today, do to make them feel very fast-paced. You know, for example, the Bourne Identity movies. They have fight sequences where the camera cuts. I'd be curious how many times does it cut? And it makes that scene feel so fast-paced.
Yeah.
So obviously you go in a movie where there's no cuts, it does. It slows down the movie, but I felt this movie it benefited from that because you were able to focus on the two characters or whoever was on the screen, because the way that the camera moved, you know, when they walked into that first bunker to get the instructions to go where they were going, you would come into the bunker and then it would cut to the person talking, then it would cut to them talking. It was a kind of a weird adjustment to, okay, the camera's just going to stay behind this guy and I'm not going to see his face. And then it slowly moves around. And I think it eventually kind of pulls you in, and then the scene where the one guy is in that rundown, I don't know where he's at, but it's dark and he runs into some there's German soldiers that are trying to chase him, and he falls into that underground house or room. The long takes, like, that's probably my favorite sequence of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's because of the way the shots were done. Like when he walks out and that house or whatever's on fire, and then you slowly see the shadow of the person walking to, I mean, it was very intense, I feel.
Yeah.
The way that the shots lingered, you could see everything. You could allow the entire scenery and the setting could set in, and you could focus on all of it. And it wasn't like, you know, when you have the quick cuts, you can't really focus on the stuff.
Yeah. That fire, by the way, all fake. I'm not kidding. They had lights flickering, and that the entire church that was burning was not real. And I didn't know that. It looked real to me. Yeah, like you were saying, that sequence you're talking about. Yeah, it's a really unique sequence because there's this town that's obviously been war torn, and buildings are collapsed, and all that's really standing now are portions of walls and stuff. And it's nighttime, and the German soldiers know that there's a British soldier nearby, or maybe they don't, I don't know. But to be able to see, they're repeatedly firing flares into the sky. And so this light is cast from, you know, extreme left to right and right to left, and it's just like, you know, you just see shadows sweeping across the screen, and the music just starts to swell at that point. And then, yeah, German soldiers show up and he's running, and it's insane, and it's action packed, but it's all one take. To kind of counteract this, is what comes to mind is I've never seen the Taken films, but I've seen a clip where someone criticized, isn't it Taken with Liam Neeson? Liam Neeson. Yeah. I think it's in the third one. There's a scene where he jumps over a fence. He's chasing somebody and they jump over a fence, and then he jumps over the fence after the guy. And from him going from the ground to the fence over and back to the ground, there were like 12 cuts. And it was just like insane. And it was basically, at least it's theorized that the reason they did that is because Liam Neeson's a little bit older now, and him jumping over a fence doesn't look too good. But if you cut it up 12 times and show like specifically the foot grabbing this, whatever, jumping, whatever, and it made him look like he jumped over it real quick, and it made it seem like quick and action-y.
So you mentioned in that scene, the swell of the music.
Thomas Newman did the soundtrack to this one, and I didn't realize it at first that it was Thomas Newman, but pretty much everything he's done I've really liked. He did Road to Perdition, and he did American Beauty, and he also did Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events, and that soundtrack was amazing.
He's done a couple of the Bond films.
So yeah, this movie, yeah, like you said, it felt kind of slow because it is one take, and you know, the whole thing is that these guys are going through enemy territory and danger could be lurking at any moment. So they don't just run through. They're walking, they're crawling through things and whatnot. And Thomas Newman's music just kind of slowly comes in. It's not like big and, you know, like the Avengers or Star Wars. It's not huge and brassy. It's just, you know, strings and a piano. And it just kind of gives you that eerie feeling of danger could be anywhere. And it's just beautiful music. And, you know, unfortunately, we're talking a bunch about music, but we can't play it. So I feel like there's not much more to say about that.
Well, and like, you know, at the beginning, you're like, I never realized that they were related.
I didn't, no.
So Thomas Newman is part of it's like a Hollywood, I'm on Wikipedia, so take it for what you will. But they call it a film scoring family dynasty.
Dynasty.
So Thomas Newman, his dad is Alfred Newman, who was a composer. He won Academy Award for Best Original Score 9 times. So, along with his dad, his mother, Maria Newman, his uncle, Lionel Newman, and Emil Newman, his cousin, Randy Newman, who is a singer-songwriter, there's a Joey Newman, and they're all involved in music. It doesn't say whether or not they're all in film or not, but it seems like, you know, it's a film scoring dynasty. So, it's if you see the name Newman, it's a family affair, so to speak.
Okay. As you can tell, you know, I mentioned that this was my pick to win the Oscars. This was my favorite film in recent years, or not years, but recent memory. And I have seen this one twice. So it's pretty obvious to say that I would rate this one 2 tickets. I think it was very deserving of a ticket, especially in this day and age of superhero movies and crappy blockbusters.
Stop talking about Fast and the Furious movies. I'm just kidding.
It's not just
Transformers movies.
It's not just those movies. It definitely deserved a ticket. This was a movie that I felt like, if you have a chance to, it's probably not in theaters anymore, but if you do get a chance, see it in a theater. I don't think the TV will do it justice, and unless you have a 2,000-inch TV like Frank does in the Weird Al song. there's your obscure reference. The slow pace and the single take, normally those would turn you off, but it really is what made this film work, I think. And the single take aspect of it really pulls you in and you just become one with the movie. And it was phenomenal. I don't say that about many movies. And, you know, I'll probably be purchasing this one when it comes out. It should be seen. Not saying that Parasite doesn't deserve it. I haven't seen that one, but this one I felt of the, you know, Joker and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, of those movies, I felt that this one really deserved to take the cake.
I give it 2 tickets for sure. Only saw it once in theaters, but would definitely go see it again. And my hope is that when it does come out on home video, that they do have a good behind the scenes extra features or special features, because I want to know where were the cuts or what else was a special effect and not really there, and things of that nature. I did fill out an online form of who I thought was going to win.
You're that guy.
But I don't know what I don't.
I'm going to go online and get my form, and I'm going to
it was
do my due diligence.
Sorry for the voice.
Really, what just happened? Well, I think it was through the, and no, we don't get any money from this company, but Redbox.
Okay.
They had an online form, and if you just filled it out, you got points on their rewards program or whatever.
Oh, hey, there's an envelope from Redbox. Hey, it's got $3,000. All right.
Not that much. Oh, you mean Frodo? What?
Sorry.
But anyway, I think based on the Golden Globe, I did pick this one to win. But in my, because you got more points for if you pick the right ones. And I picked this one because I'm like, I think it will win. But I personally wanted Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to be the winner. But again, it didn't win. Parasite won. So I'm really excited to see Parasite. And I would like to see it in theaters, but I don't know if it's getting to the probably the tail end of that movie's run. I mentioned Saving Private Ryan. That's one of my favorite movies that deal with wartime. More recently, I don't know if you feel the same about it, but I loved Dunkirk, and that was Christopher Nolan. And I feel that obviously he didn't do the one shot take, but I feel his war movie is maybe like if you put Saving Private Ryan on one end, 1917 on the other, Dunkirk falls in the middle, you know, as far as like pacing. But yeah, this one, very enjoyable. The music, the cinematography, the way that he used the single shot, I don't want to call it a gimmick, but the way that he used that to tell the story, there was a reason he chose that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was, hey, let's do this because it'll bring in moviegoers. Let's do this because it's going to help tell the story that I want to tell. So two tickets for sure.
So what did you think about 1917? Did you think it deserved to win? Have you seen Parasite and 1917 and think that the awards went the way they should have, or they should have been reversed? Let us know on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and gmail.com and at anchor.fm. And until next time, we'll see you at the movies.
And don't forget to check your ticket stubs.